Salo Falava, I'm Afamasanga Seyuli Salamasina Von Reiki, and I'm inviting you to join me on a journey through the evolution of our Pacific cultures on Culture Compass. We'll meet incredible people dedicated to preserving traditions while adapting them for today's world. Join me as we travel the Pacific to celebrate our resilience, revival, and deep-rooted connection.
Search for Culture Compass wherever you get your podcasts to listen.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia.
Hello and welcome to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Bobby McCumber. As a child in Rotuma, Charlene Erisito remembers standing on a thin stretch of land where she could see the ocean on both sides, water surrounding her like a heartbeat. That love of the sea has carried her across the Pacific, through studies at the University of the South Pacific, and now to France, where she is one of the few Fijian scientists exploring the mysteries of the deep ocean. Nicknamed Moana on expeditions, Charlene's journey is about curiosity, resilience, and proving that representation matters. Charlene Erisito, welcome to Stories from the Pacific.
Thank you so much, Bobby. It's great to be here.
Can you describe your childhood in Fiji, Rotuma, and also Kiribati?
So my childhood was mostly centered around the ocean, which is what fueled my passion for marine science. I absolutely love being around the sea or just swimming and doing any sort of activity around the sea. And growing up in Rotuma, it was great because we lived in Mutusa, where my father is from, father's family is from. And then we moved to Kiribati, which is also very much surrounded by the sea, and we just got to experience so much more. I remember a lot more from my childhood in Kiribati than I do from Rotuma because I was very young when we were in Rotuma. But I got to eat fresh fish from the ocean, got to see my first coral reef or patch reefs. So it was very exciting and also very scary as a kid, you know, snorkeling for the first time and then you see this huge coral patch reef and you're wondering, oh my gosh, what is that? So it's both like an amazing experience, but also a bit terrifying when you're really young.
Tell me about seeing coral for the first time. How were you feeling?
Seeing coral for the first time, I was both very excited, but also very scared because I had no idea what it was or what it was doing in the ocean. But I was also excited because there's so many different colors and then you have all the reef fish around. So it was a very exciting experience, but also a very scary one. But it led me to ask more questions and then to find out more about this entire ecosystem that's living in our oceans and to understand it. And then when you come to understand it, you sort of get more of a deeper appreciation for it. So that was one of the things that started my passion for marine science and studying the ocean.
Standing where you can see the sea from both sides of Rotuma, what would I see through your eyes as a little girl?
The place that I described, I guess it was much larger when I was a child to the point where I thought, oh, okay, I can see both sides of the sea, but it's actually quite bigger when I revisited this year than I thought. But what you could imagine was just standing on a piece of land that connects two parts of the island. And when you look to your right, you can see the sea. And then when you look to your left, you can see the sea as well. And I guess Rotuma is shaped like a guitar, they would say, or a bottle, where part of it is like the neck of the bottle or the guitar neck. So that is where I grew up, and that's where I could see both sides of the sea. If not there, then it was definitely in Kiribati because it's a bit, yeah.
You can definitely do that from parts of Kiribati as well.
Yeah.
Were you always curious as a child, asking lots of questions?
Yes, I was a very curious child and still a curious adult. I love learning about new things and I love just, you know, finding out about how things work and why it's there, or like, what's its story. And I really enjoyed like basic science and biology and chemistry throughout primary school and high school. So I think it was one of the things that fed into that curiosity and really grew from there.
So enjoying those subjects in school, did you always know that you wanted to work in the science field?
Yes, actually, I kind of was drawn to science right from a very early age. I guess it was the curiosity, but it was just seeing, I think, how everything fit together and how each organism or each part of the world has a role to play sort of made me want to find out more about it. Especially with marine science. So it really led me to studying science as I got closer to university, but I was actually on my way to environmental science, joining the environmental science program when I finished high school. I'd wanted to be an environmentalist, and I had only heard about the environmental science program. And the decision to take marine science actually came about at the very last minute when I was filling in my scholarship application form. I saw that it was a program that was offered at the University of the South Pacific and made a quick decision to do that instead. And so here I am now. Yeah.
I imagine that curiosity, you asking lots of questions to both, you know, not only your parents, but your teachers. How did your teachers react to your curiosity of science in school?
That's actually a good question. I wasn't one to ask a lot of questions in class, actually. So when it came to wanting to know about something, I would try and find out for myself. So I was very I was talkative, but also very shy when it came to asking questions. And if I didn't understand something, it would encourage me to go home, try to find out more about it, look it up, see if I could understand it, explain it to myself in a way that I could grasp it. And so that's basically how I satisfied my curiosity with anything that I didn't understand or that I found challenging to understand.
How did those childhood experiences inspire your decision to pursue marine science?
So I love being outside and I love being around the ocean. So it was a very easy decision when I saw that marine science was a program that was being offered at USP. And as soon as I saw it, I pictured a life of me being around the ocean, being, you know, on or in the ocean, just surrounded by the sea. And that's what inspired me to take up marine science. What I didn't realize, though, is that with any science, there's a long period of where you have to be in the office and on your laptop and not like the whole year in the ocean or surrounded by the sea, but the expeditions and the field trips really made a difference. So, yeah.
What does the ocean mean to you in a way that words can't quite capture?
Oh, wow. I've actually found that to be one of the more difficult questions to explain when asked what the ocean means to me, because it's like a part of me that I find hard to describe to someone. It's like, for me, the ocean's a part of me to the point where I can describe its physical characteristics, what's happening, things like that. But if I were to describe what it means to me, it would be like trying to tell someone, oh, how much does your heart or your brain mean to you, you know? Like an extension of yourself. Like, how much does this body part mean to you if it's a part of you? So for me, it's like that. It's that important way. It's a part of me. It's a part of my life. It's a lifeline for us, especially in the Pacific. So that's... It means everything, basically.
Yeah. How do you feel when you are in the ocean, deep down in the ocean?
Wow. When I'm in the ocean, I just feel calm and like at peace, like your home, sort of, you know? it gives me a sense of energy, but I also feel very calm and very collected. And there's just so much to see at the same time. So you're very excited in the moment when you're looking around at so much life. And yeah, I just feel like I belong.
Yeah. Do you feel that anywhere else, or is it just the ocean?
I guess it's similar to the feeling when you're around a group of people who are your home, or you're like your family, you know, you're very close friends. You just feel refreshed, you feel calm, you feel at peace, you're not worrying about anything. So, yeah.
Do you remember the very first time you realized the ocean wasn't just water, but something alive to you?
So when we think about the ocean, we're mostly thinking about it in terms of just this large body of water. But when the more I study it, the more I realize how everything in it is connected and everything thrives together. So when I realized that, it made me want to know more about it, want to advocate for it, want to find out more about how those processes work, how everything is connected. And it's just such an important part of the world that we don't really know much about it. Like the deep sea itself, like we've only seen maybe 0.001%.
Wow. But
from my PhD, I've gotten to see so many different images, so much life. So it's an ongoing process, like finding out more about the ocean and realizing how big it is and how much of a role it plays in our day-to-day lives.
As an adult, what do you carry with you from your childhood days of swimming and exploring?
As an adult, I carry as much as possible the respect for the ocean and life in the ocean. So I try my best to not leave as much of a damaging footprint whenever I can, whatever's within my power. So that's something that I grew up with, where we respect the places we go and the places that we visit, especially since, you know, any small impact could make a change. I try to do that whenever I can and wherever I go.
Was there a moment you realized science could be more than just a subject at school, that it could be your life's work?
That's an interesting question. So when I started my bachelor's, I sort of knew I wanted to continue all the way to a PhD. I just didn't know what the topic of my study would be or what research I would be going into. So I didn't really know that it could go as far as I've gotten and as I'm still going, because it's a journey. So no, I had no idea that it would be turned into my life's work currently.
What was it about the unknown of the deep sea that drew you in rather than pushed you away?
So for me, it was exactly that, the unknown. Like, I had no experience in deep sea research. I did my master's in pearl oyster aquaculture, which was completely different from deep sea science. And so when I saw the advert for a PhD in deep sea science using images and acoustics, I knew I had some basic knowledge that could be applied to it, but I had never worked with deep sea images, or with ROV images, or with acoustic data. So it was exactly that, the unknown, that I found to be an opportunity to learn and to grow and to know more about an ecosystem that I had not much knowledge about previously.
What would you say is the most surprising thing studying science has taught you about yourself? Not the ocean, but you.
Honestly, I think the most surprising thing that science has taught me about myself is resilience. Because, yeah, there will be times when you will be wondering, why did I go into this? What made me choose this path, you know? But then there are also times when you're like, oh, I'm so glad I chose this. This is amazing. So it's like a seesaw. There'll be like ups and downs, but science really taught me how to bounce back, how to keep going, even though I hit a low or whatever challenges I may face. So that's one of the things that's taught me about myself.
Can you give me an example of one of the challenges that you've had?
A minor challenge that I just faced recently was the threat of maybe losing all of my data because I had forgotten to back it up. which is a very normal and scary thing in science. But thankfully, I didn't lose anything, and I was able to learn my lesson and back everything up. Always create a backup. That's the main lesson in science that I've known for a long time. But you still forget, especially when you're so busy, like trying to analyze your data that you forget to back it up. So I've learned that just last Friday. And again, I've learned it again just last Friday. So I guess that's one of the minor small challenges that I've faced. But I guess for me personally, one of the major challenges that I went through when starting off with my PhD was, I lost my dad just a few months into my PhD when I had just started. And I don't know, it was very, for me, it was one of the hardest things I had to go through. And so I was only 3 or 4 months into my PhD in my first year. And I returned home just as he was getting worse. So he had cancer. And so just as he was getting worse, I returned home. I got to see him. And then he passed away shortly after. So just going through that was such a heartbreaking thing to go through. I mean, grief is a journey, right? So we're still going through it, but we learned to live with it. And it was so hard for me that I had decided to, I had decided to stop my PhD. So that was last year, 2024, I was on my way to stopping my PhD when my supervisors, I really appreciate the amount of support that I've gotten from them. Because if it weren't for them, I wouldn't have realized that, okay, maybe I can do this, you know, and bounce back from that time. So I was actually supposed to stop my PhD somewhere towards the end of last year. And I came to New Caledonia to wrap up whatever I had done and to do whatever I could before stopping my PhD. And my supervisor, as soon as I arrived in New Caledonia, I checked my emails and she sent me an email. She said, I think you can go on this expedition. So she sent me out to sea on a boat, my favorite thing in the world. So I spent like a week and a half on the boat and I realized, okay, you know what? I actually love this. I actually really think that I should finish what I started. So after almost a year or maybe a few months of going back and forth about whether to continue or not, it came down to being out on the ocean for me to change my mind and get back on the horse, basically, and try to finish my PhD. And yeah, so that was, I guess, the most challenging thing for me to go through in all my years of studying. But I'm glad that I was able to get through it, and I'm still getting through it. And
what has grief taught you about strength that science could never?
I think grief has taught me that strength is not something that that goes away. Like even in your lowest points during grief, you're still strong because it takes strength to go through grief. So that's one of the things that grief has taught me about strength that I think science couldn't have taught me.
Yeah. Can you tell us more about that expedition?
The turning point. Yes. So that expedition, we were in New Caledonia, we were going out just around the continental shelf, and it was about one and a half weeks long. But it was really, it was new for me because we were using different methods and I hadn't learned anything or had no background in eDNA sampling, which is one of the things we did. Sampling micronectin, which are these really small like fish, crustaceans that are very important in the ecosystem, in the ocean ecosystem. So because it was new methods and new things to learn, it was like I had forgotten about what I had been through and I was just fully into learning, which is what I love. And it brought back the passion to continue and to actually try and finish my PhD. Yeah.
When you're on one of these expeditions, so you said you were on this for a week and a half, how much of that time are you spending underwater and how deep do you actually go?
So the thing with expeditions, there's so many different types. So the one that I was on last year, we didn't do any diving or anything like that. We were mainly sampling from the water column. So there wasn't any, we were just on the water, basically in a boat.
You're currently living in France. Can you tell us the story of how you came to that decision?
So the PhD project that I'm currently on is based, allows me to be based in France and New Caledonia. So it was a tough decision, but it was because it's so far away from my family and friends. But it was something that I knew I wanted to experience because I did my bachelor's and my master's in Fiji, and I had always sort of wanted to experience what it was like learning in a different environment. And I couldn't have chosen a closer place. It was terrible. Yeah.
Moving to France must have been a huge adjustment. What was that like?
It was exciting, honestly. When I first moved up, I was excited because there's so many things that I had to find out about. And there's also the language barrier because I had never learned French before. But the people were so nice. So it was really nice that I had a good support system there in terms of my supervisor, my colleagues, and then the friends that I've made. So it was good. It was really good. But if I have to share honestly, the first few weeks when I got there, so I was there for like 3 weeks. And then I remember talking to someone on the phone and being like, okay, I want to come home now.
Yeah.
This holiday is too long. Mm. And it had only been like a few weeks. But then I stuck it out and I'm really glad that I did. It's a very nice experience to be abroad, to be in a different country. And it really forces you to learn things about yourself that you wouldn't really have learned if you didn't move, you know?
And how is your French? Are you speaking the language a little bit more nowadays?
No. It's very beautiful, challenging language that I hope someday I'll be fluent in, but I understand if I'm not. I'm not going to be too hard about that on myself, but I can sort of understand like a little bit in terms of like the announcements on public transportation, you know, things to get me around or to order at a restaurant. But it's very broken. It's not great. Yeah.
Charlene, what is next for you? Do you have any other expeditions coming up?
Yes, I have an expedition coming up in November here in New Caledonia. So that's coming up soon and I'm very excited about it. So that's what's next.
Yeah. What would be your dream expedition?
Oh, that's an easy question. My dream expedition, I was on it earlier this year with National Geographic's Pristine Seas. That was my dream expedition because I had no idea that I could be able to contribute to my community through my career. So to have that opportunity to go back to Rotuma, take part in deep sea research in Rotuma and in Fiji, that is a dream expedition. I also did my first submersible dive on that expedition. So I don't know if anything will ever beat that. But that was my dream expedition.
So you had your first submersible dive. Are you able to share how that experience was?
It was a very, I hate to say, but it was a very life-changing experience.
Why is that?
You really don't know what to expect, you know? Because, I mean, I'd never been a sub before. And then so I was very nervous beforehand. I was super nervous. I was honestly really scared because I didn't know what to expect. So I was scared up to the point where I was getting in. I think one of the photographers got a photo of me looking back. And I look excited, but I'm also really scared. Then you get into sub and it's just glass from the top, like all over. It's like a glass ball in front of you. And it's very clear and you can see everything. And so it was very scary as we were going down. One of the things I still laugh about is that I got in and I looked for my seatbelt as soon as I sat in the seat. I was looking for a seatbelt and then I realized, what is the seatbelt going to save you from? Sounds so funny. It's just a normal reaction when you get into a car seat, because that's how it felt, except you're going into the ocean. And then, so as soon as we started our descent and we were just surrounded by the deep blue, my first thought was, oh, I could live here. I could spend forever here. I love this. So the nerves just went away. We started seeing so many different creatures on our way down, organisms on our way down, so many things that I had seen pictures of, but I've never actually seen in person. So I was very excited about that, seeing all the different coral growth forms that I've been annotating in images also existing in Rotuma, in Fiji. So it was a very good experience to see that in person.
What would you say is the most interesting creature that you have seen in the deep sea that people may not know about, and why is it the most interesting to you?
I think one of the most, there's a lot of very interesting creatures.
I'm sure there are.
If I had to choose one, I think it would be this coral sample that we collected from New Caledonia. So what was so interesting about it was that I'd never seen a golden coral before. So it was, the color of its skeleton was golden, and then when you move it around in the light, it would give off this sort of iridescent color. So it'd be like a rainbow color changing, but the main skeleton itself was golden. So that was one of the, because I'd never seen colors like that on a coral. So that was one of the most interesting things for me to see in person and actually see a sample.
If you could write a message to your younger self, the girl swimming in the sea, what would you tell her now?
If I could write a message to my younger self, I would tell her to keep going, keep learning, keep being curious, keep asking questions and then trying to find the answer. And then if you can't find the answers, always ask for help.
Good advice. Charlene, thank you so much for joining me and for sharing how your love of the sea has taken you from Rotuma to the deep ocean, showing the Pacific voices belong in global science. Thank you, Charlene.
Thank you so much, Bobby, for having me. This is a good experience, and thank you so much for your questions and for this conversation that we've had.
Thank you. That was Charlene Erasito, marine scientist and PhD candidate in deep sea ecology. You've been listening to Stories from the Pacific. I'm Bobby McCumber. To hear more stories about unique and incredible people from the Pacific, just search for Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. If you or someone you know has an interesting story to share, you can email us at storiesfromthepacific@abc.net.au. This story was produced on the lands of the Yuggera and Turrbal people. I am hosting this story on the lands of the Kaurna people.